Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Morning, everyone, or good afternoon, depending on what time zone you're joining us from. And welcome to today's webinar, Food Fraud Prevention, 10 Years of Training in MOOCs, the Impact on Strategy. My name's Amy. I'm a member of the marketing team at the Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer technical support to our speaker. Today, we're not only welcoming Chris Reno, a member of our team over here at PJFSI, but also Dr. John Spink, a name that should be familiar if you've attended one of our webinars before. Dr. Spink is the director of the Food Fraud Prevention Academy and an assistant professor at Michigan State University. We'll be introducing him to you more in depth in just a few moments. But now, without further ado, I want to introduce our good friend, Dr. John Spink. As I said, he is the director of the Food Fraud Prevention Think Tank and the lead instructor of the Food Fraud Prevention Academy, which provides free online training. He's also an assistant professor in the Department of Supply Chain Management in the Eli Broad College of Business at Michigan State University. He's a widely published author in a number of leading academic journals and has helped shape national and global perception of food fraud as a threat. Dr. Spink authored the first textbook on the topic, Food Fraud Prevention, Development, Management, and Implementation, which was published in 2019. Dr. Spink, Happy New Year, your first webinar with us in 2023, and welcome back to a PJFSI webinar. I'm going to hand things over to you, and you can take it away whenever you're ready.
All right, thank you. See that. All right, there we go. Just make sure my, yep, okay. Making sure it works. Let me go back. Whoops. I'll get it. Don't worry.
We're going way back here.
Yeah. Okay. Now I got it. All right. There's a little delay. Well, thank you, everybody, for this. Glad you could make it, and glad to have this a part of the recording. As I said, as advertised, I'm Dr. John Spink, professor, director of the Food Fraud Prevention Academy, and in supply chain management at Michigan State. And so today is February 17th, and one thing that's really tough is that earlier this week we had a mass shooting at Michigan State. Three students died and five are in the hospital. One is out of critical care. So I think the big thing is that this is tough times, and a lot of things do happen. We're processing a lot here. We're trying to get back to the classroom. We're trying to listen to students and everybody else, and us as well. You know, I mean, this is pretty intense for someone that teaches large classrooms of undergraduates. But part of that process is us to reflect on that, but reflect on what we do and find value in what we do. And I think a real key is looking at food safety. You know, what we do every day, focusing on this, reducing fraud helps businesses, helps companies operate. The food safety practices as an auditor, as a CB, as a food company, we have a big role to keep the whole machine of society going forward, I guess. Wow, that got kind of big, kind of fast, but that's what you do in the midst of this. So I think this is a bit of the return to normalcy, and it's us focusing on what we need to do. And it actually is kind of perfect for the topic that we had picked long before that. Looking at food fraud prevention, obviously, but looking back 10 years of training in the MOOCs, I can believe it. It seems like a billion years ago, and it seems like it was just yesterday. I remember that first day, February 13th, 2013, going into the building where the recording was, and while wondering how it was going to go, if anybody was there. I think we had 980 people live on the line, which is a little bit freaky to look at the screen. Can you imagine looking at your laptop screen and knowing that live over 900 people are looking at you thinking about the topic? And so it really got going there. And I think then we now have a good time to reflect on the impact on strategy. So it's taking the lessons learned, the evolution, and looking at this point now of how we move forward. So I think that for me, the audience that I'm talking to first are new people that are new to food fraud prevention. Maybe you've just been assigned this topic or just became serious for your company. There's a lot of you that have been through a lot of these webinar series and me talking about a lot of things. Some of the content gets to be kind of routine, like I was going to talk about that again. But at this point, well, the third group it's really speaking to are the certification bodies and auditors to say, how do you evolve in 2023 to be more thorough and more effective in addressing food fraud. So I'll look at all three of you. So it's a good time to step back and look at this. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to look at this kind of evolution and how we become more efficient and more strategic. If you have any other questions, need resources, foodfraudprevention.com is a great place to look for a lot of free information. So first is resources. So there's a lot of things we're going to talk about here, and there's a lot more information that you can get. That textbook there is 900, you know, two inches thick, kind of my life's work poured out in one spot. It's good and bad, you know, when you see it all there at once. But that's got a lot of resources. So a lot of questions you have will probably be answered there. And the way that we communicate really is our MOOCs, Massive Open Online Courses. And so we've originally had four of them. We've got two new ones. We've actually got a third new one, Criminology, so new it's not on the list. And then two of the USDA National Organic Program. Now those got more important because USDA now has a strengthening organic enforcement rule. And so now there's more requirements for if you make USDA organic claims or use a certificate. Fortunately, there's resources there, and those resources are calibrated and synced with all the information we've talked about in the past. We work a lot with USDA, and they also inform us and lead us. When we developed those programs, we knew what the draft of the strengthening organic enforcement law looked like. We didn't know the regulations yet. We didn't include that in there, but we included mentally, we knew the direction it was going. Fortunately, those are, you know, let's say 10 years of MOOCs. That goes all the way back to the first MOOC, the one, number one there, the Food Fraud Prevention Overview MOOC. That one's, again, 2013 is when we started. Some of the very core concepts that we talked about there are still being implemented and still being adopted, such as in strengthening organic enforcement. You know, looking at the crime triangle, looking at situational crime prevention as a core, looking at prevention. Those were things that were 10 years ago. So fortunately, the research hit on some core topics then and have continued to evolve. And now we just support them. Moving into more executive education, which you'll see more this summer and others. But a lot of resources there. So a lot going on for you to follow up. And here are the two courses, USDA. I can't emphasize these enough. They're free. You get a certificate from USDA. Why not take them? So I think that we did a really good job. We worked really hard on these, and I think they're some of the most effective training courses we have. So there's one on organic fraud in the criminal mind, and then preventing the organic fraud opportunity. So the first one really jumps deeper into criminology. And actually, it was interesting when we put this MOOC together. So this is a part of me reflecting on 10 years of MOOCs. So that's why I'm going a little longer on some of these than I might. It was interesting to put this together because they wanted a lot of training for their inspectors and investigators about the crime, criminals, how they think, how they act. Usually we're talking about audits, not inspections or investigations. So an audit is really reviewing the process and making sure that the process is being followed. An inspection is looking at the process and making sure that it's effectively being implemented. That's a whole different story. So USDA does a lot of that deeper interaction. They're actually doing mass balance checks. They're doing they're testing systems. They're looking for documentation that could be off. And then finally is the investigation. An investigation occurs at the end after there's an incident. So at that point, they're looking for wrongdoing, whether that's willful blindness or unintentional activity, then that's a lot deeper. So USDA really helped us expand the curriculum into that real root cause. And then we since expanded that into one criminology MOOC and have another one going on. Now, one thing, my mom loves to read those criminology articles we write because it's international intrigue. It's, you know, money laundering. It's all sorts of stuff going on. These criminal networks are really a lot of times like a TV show. And that's what we're trying to figure out what they do so we can put these standard operating procedures in place. When you put that standard operating procedure in place, a common vulnerability assessment, a common types of countermeasures and control systems, the bad guys see you as a hard target. That's the goal. So think about like someone robbing your house. Someone's looking to rob a house. Now, unless you have a Picasso in your living room that they want or something specific they want, they're not looking to rob your house. They're looking for fraud opportunities. That's the criminal mind. They drive down the street looking for a house that has a front door open and a big bag of money just inside the house that they can see. You know, easy to see the target and come and go. So you want to make yourself a harder target, meaning that they look at your house and they see a front door that's bolted and locked. They notice that. They notice that your windows are closed. The bushes are cut away from the window. A dog's barking. The light's on. And when they look in the window, they don't see anything valuable. So you're trying to do everything you can inside, outside, around your house to dissuade those fraudsters. And that's what we look at with the criminal mind. And then it shifts to prevention, preventing the organic fraud opportunity. So the first part is understanding out there what's going on in the environment, the marketplace. And then it's looking at what you do for yourself, of how you then put those activities, countermeasures, and control systems in place to make yourself a harder target. So between those leads into us reflecting back of how we've evolved over time, again, 10 years of this trading, and then looking at the real implementation here right into a law and regulation. The next step may be a third MOOC in the series. Actually, good idea. I should make a note of that for this specifically strengthening organic enforcement. That would then take those two together and then really make it really precise. So it's all coming together. And what that shows when we're shifting from 10 years of training in MOOCs and evolution, it's looking at the strategy. And the strategy is you being more formal about the real management systems you're putting in place. Also, I'm in the Department of Supply Chain Management. Interesting. Now, so let's look at the MOOCs as well. So early on, I constantly saw in the marketplace, say with specifically intellectual property rights counterfeiting, anti-counterfeiting activities. That was my PhD research, finished in 2009. I saw a solution looking for a problem. So you had some, I've got just a bag clip here. So you've got a bag clip and you say, wow, we have these bag clips. I want to figure out where we could sell it. And they go looking for problems in the marketplace where a bag clip could help. So this we use on our bread or on our potato chips. They go looking for people that have potato chips that are spoiling. The opposite side of that is to look at the problem you have. So specifically there of, you know, there maybe it's a small bag of product. We wouldn't need a big clip. So when we would then precisely define our problem. So when we looked at food fraud at the start, we looked at it from a food perspective. We looked at it from within food safety, food authenticity. That's where we started. That's where the problem. When melamine was in infant formula and pet food, when horse meat was in beef, it was a food problem. The Food Safety Authority of Ireland found it. They tracked it. You know, DEFRA in the UK was monitoring that. The Elliott Review is from the agricultural ministry there, DEFRA. So it was a food problem, and it was approached from a food problem. Rightly so, because again, we're trying to detect it and get it out of the system. So we looked at food fraud from that perspective. And at that point, we expanded into things like criminology, which obviously made sense because that's the root cause of the bad guy. And so we went that direction. And I constantly found that something that was a challenge is not being able to communicate clearly to the business people, the business side of things, because there's a lot going on in the business side, and we're really like risk reduction, risk control, kind of operations and things like that. So it's been fascinating to shift over to business and supply chain management and then approach the problem from this perspective. So this is the class I teach, Introduction to Supply Chain Management, broad as you can get in the topic. But then the big thing is I go from that perspective of what's the overall goal of a business, and then look at supply chain disruptions specifically. And that's a key that a lot of times companies were just giving them information and they didn't know how to put it in their supply chain disruption system. And then we use case studies of food fraud prevention. So right there, we're kind of slipping it in. There's a lot of the supply chain management field that didn't really know about food safety, even food companies. They kind of know something's going on. It was kind of under supplier quality assurance. But now that we're teaching supply chain management business school students, so every business school student at Michigan State is required to take my class, and I'm the only instructor for it. So when I use food safety examples, when I use food fraud examples, they just inherently know the value and the application of food fraud and food safety in there. So see, from the early on MOOCs where we're going at it from within our discipline, we're now expanding it. We're now looking at it from both sides. And also we cover enterprise risk management. And that's good. That's important too, because a lot of even the business people in the operations don't understand that corporate strategy decision-making. And the key there is once you understand those enterprise-wide risks, you understand that food fraud absolutely, positively, completely is a ultimate enterprise-wide risk. You know, it's one of those things that's usually very, very unlikely but the impact can be absolutely catastrophic. So we almost have to teach the business people about enterprise risk management in their systems, and the food safety people on the side. So with this, again, it's required reading here, and I share it freely with other instructors at other universities, sections of it. So we're expanding it. And the key is this supply chain management, you know, as a discipline, teaching supply chain managers about best practices for supply chain management. So it's coming from that perspective that a student that graduates that's in an organization and going to continue, usually our supply chain management students have a high retention rate in supply chain management, is that those students over the years are just going to inherently know from their best practices of themselves what it's like to do things like procurement. What are best practices of procurement? That all of a sudden then procurement is seamlessly integrated into everything they think about. And that's one of the key topics I'll cover in a couple slides. So if you are interested in that, scmintro.com, you can register for an update. So call to action for you. I want to cover the end before we get to the start. Fully implement what was recommended in February 2019. So way back then, right after GFSI came out, we had our first food fraud audit guide MOOC in 2017 originally. And so just continue. The key is that if you started on this early, then you've already got the foundation set. You don't have to change it. So really just fully implement what was there. I would say also fully audit what's there. And knowing that the people have what's being expected, that's the USDA training explains what is really expected. And which is the same, the 2019 recommendations, the same as our original audit guide, but now really do it. I think that's a real key of something to look at. And we'll expand on this, you know, with lessons learned all the time. I mean, you going out into your audits are learning this as well. So the GFSI Foundation, sorry, I went a little quick on that. The GFSI Foundation, just as a reminder here, is that food fraud has evolved over time. It's natural that we're just getting to the point of saying, whoa, we should really implement a real serious management system here. And if you look all the way back, we first met the GFSI team in 2011, and they were at MSU for a conference. It was an S-Safe board meeting, and I just happened, they had an open slot and asked me to present on this new emerging topic, and it struck with them, and that gave us a lot of motivation, because these were thought leaders in the field of food, you know, food industry people. Eve Ray was a big key person at Danone then. Frank Yannis was a vice chair. Neil Marshall, other people that you might, Mike Robach was, I think, vice chair at the time as well. So they were interested in this. And we realized that was something. And so then the next step is we had this article published. We had been working on it. So what really happened then is 2011, it was defined as a thing. So in an academic sense, it was defined. It's not just a casual topic people are talking about. It was really defined. Now, right then, and later that year, in 2011, GFSI came out with their guidance document, version 6. It's logical that food fraud wasn't in there because everything had just been defined a short while earlier. And then, all of a sudden, after melamine, before horse meat, and once we'd been talking about these definitions of terms and introduced to them, the GFSI board, specifically, again, Eve Ray Danone was the chair at the time. Their question was, what is food fraud? And then it expanded to what could or should GFSI do about it. Now, in the midst of that, horse meat hit. So in the midst of that project, everything changed, and it got to be, what will GFSI do about it? That was a real key incident there, because once horse meat occurred, it really, really moved forward. So you'll see there in 2014, GFSI then, I think it was really conceived in 2014, because we had a position paper, we had our findings in the think tank, and the GFSI board then created the food fraud position paper, GFSI food fraud position paper. That's 2014, in advance of the 2017 publication, the guidance document. 3 years earlier, the GFSI board said, hey, this is coming, and here's what's going to look like. So mid-cycle, they wanted to let everybody know that it was coming, partially because they felt they needed to deal with it. I mean, horse meat was a big deal. So then Guidance Document 7 came out in 2017, and then the requirement was around January 2018 for compliance, that it was required. So I'd say really food fraud was born at that point. Now, you still don't know what's going on. So we're trying to look at this perspective back and forward to see where we're going and really what you should be doing this year to be on the right vector, the path, the specifics of what you should be doing, of what the future is going to look like. You want to be on a path that's going to be traveled, right? You don't want to have to redo it. So I think food fraud was really born at that point, and we got clarity on what the requirement was. But just because there's a new requirement doesn't mean it's always implemented. I remember my first couple of years at Chevron Corporation, 91, around then, is that there would always be these corporate, big deal, corporate training, and the managers would all go for a week off site someplace. And it was crazy, and they'd come back. And we thought it was flavor of the month. And whatever it was they were talking about, whatever it was that for a month they were talking about it, and then it went away. So, I mean, that's realistic when something new happens, especially something like food fraud prevention. It's so different than food safety. You know, dealing with human adversaries, so different than E. coli and process. It's outside your company instead of inside. And so the question was, is will it really continue? And that's when GFSI, partially recommended by us, did write a food fraud technical document in 2018. So that's only 5 months after the requirement. GFSI is basically saying, hey, this is for real. It's required. Here's what we expect. Here's what we expect of auditors. Here's what we expect of you getting audited. So even there, some audit groups said, how can we instantly educate our food safety experts on something like food fraud? Well, GFSI laid out specifically what that early requirement was, which at the very beginning is just to have a process and follow it. And all of a sudden, over time, things like our MOOCs, free audit guide training for food fraud and food defense, you've got ways to educate. Now that the USDA training is there, you can now base your knowledge, base your programs off, you know, free USDA training. What's great about that too is that, like with the USDA training, is that you can tell customers that your audits are based on this training, and here's a here's a way to find out what that entails. And so the cycle is continuing. And that's the thing. We all do need to have a logical, rational, efficient food fraud prevention plans in place, because everybody suffers if there's food fraud. So we really see from all that, you know, on the left there, you'll see food fraud really is growing up. Now that's 2018. So we saw a year later, so 2019, people are starting to implement it, December 2019. But then what happened then? COVID. And so just as we were getting, you know, with the Food Fraud Prevention Academy and the think tank, things were growing. Just as people were starting to take the next step to really formalize their process, all of a sudden that put things on hold. Now we see coming out of it, coming out of COVID, we all of a sudden are hit with Ukraine, Russia, inflation, things like that. Other events occur that kind of delay some things, but we see that real formality, that people are stepping back to say, you know, this is a problem. We do need to get a little more formal. And that's our role, I think, of us as the creators of this webinar, the hosts, thank you, and us to explain what are those actions. And that's what we'll cover next. So the history here, and a different way to look at it. So originally the benchmark document came out, ramped up. We had the second audits, in 2019, 2020. COVID disrupted us. And then we're back to business here in 2022. Now, the thing with that is interesting. You know, Ukraine, Russia is still, we thought, who knew how long that was going to last? I remember I did a review with students in class assignment 7 days after Russia had entered Ukraine. And a big question was, was this going to be just a month or two? And all of a sudden we're over a year into it. There's a lot of predictions that it's not going to be calm for a while. So back to business is like new normal, maybe. And then the question really is, are you ready for a full GFSI audit? And I would say also for the auditors as well, what does the next step look like for you? And then also to think about, how sure are you that you're ready for that audit? And the question, a great way to start out is to conduct a self-assessment. And that's something that we've got here, is it's 10 questions to just ask yourself. You can answer yes or no, and then go through it. So I'll actually try to walk you through it. So a recommendation from me is that you do write down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then and do your own self-assessment. So we got a reality check. And let's look at, when we think about what do I mean by a full GFSI a food fraud audit, there's some things that we haven't thought about for a while. And so, like, looking in detail, and we'll have to go look at some of those. So are there purchasing or procurement requirements in the GFSI food fraud food safety management system? So there's a question for you. Do you think there are? Well, you know, do you mention the role of internal audit in your food safety management system? Now, this is your food safety management system that's supposed to have some processes for purchasing and audit. Do you mention those in there? Are pest control and laundry detergent products included in GFSI food safety system requirements? So this is something, maybe this is way getting into the details, you'd think, but that's the key. As they get more detailed, as these audits get more detailed, then we're getting more thorough. We're covering more and more of the details, because these aren't in there to make your life more difficult. These are in there because these are things that are a concern for a business. We do need to look at these things and at least consider them, so that they're not something kind of very small does not lead to a recall or illnesses. And if you knew these were all requirements, then bravo. Then you're ahead of where I was about a year or two ago when we looked in details at these. It's amazing to see what's actually in there. And then also, if yes, and if you don't cover them, you're probably not technically compliant. So there's three types of audits. And one is that the auditor asks all the questions, auditor asks some of the questions, auditor asks none of the questions for food fraud. So you could technically have passed an audit but not be fully compliant with the food fraud sections. So all these things, you may sit back and say, oh, I don't need to listen to this because we've had three audits in a row with food fraud in past. That isn't necessarily true. And that's a key that we want to do for 2023, is have you look closely at the requirements and closely at what the audit report has said for you. Now, the thing with auditors are evolving, moving forward as well. GFSI was really clear about that. At the very beginning, it's just to start the process. But of course, as we evolve over time, what are we in, like year three, four, then we're only a couple audits into this. And so we're all learning. Types of audits. So as I mentioned, there's three types of audits. Auditor asks no questions, auditor asks some questions, auditor asks all the questions about food fraud. Now, there could be a thorough audit, but you know, there's how many aspects of GFSI, there's going to be a structure. But that key is, over time, it gets more detailed, and you want to know those, because as I mentioned, you might have passed, but you might really not. But I asked, did you really meet the requirements? And you should know this, communicate this, because the only thing worse than not passing an audit when you passed one before is your boss is not realizing that might be the case. I was actually with a customer where we looked at their food fraud system, their plan, and I said, I don't think that it's fully compliant. They had an audit coming up in the next week or two. And so I recommended that they let their bosses know that they passed audits, but they weren't technically fully compliant, but we had all these things in place that we were going to already deal with them. And sure enough, it came back as the audits expanded and got more thorough. Then they did get an audit nonconformity for food fraud for the same sections they had passed two times before. And so at least in that case, the bosses knew that. And since they knew that, they weren't surprised, and they knew that we already had plans in place. So when we think about those audits, responses, when we're thinking about putting ourselves in place, just pass the audit. That's it. You know, that's number one always. Now, let's just be realistic about this, is that you could have the biggest altruistic goals in the world, but number one is you just want to pass the audit. So I get that. So you have passed it before. Now then, to see if there's a few things you missed, we'll expand on that. And then meet the audit requirements. That's what you want to do. And then you're looking at meet other compliance requirements. So that's other compliance. So there could be food safety, customs, financial reporting, or others. And then meet internal compliance. So your auditors may, internal auditors, your company have a certain way that you want to deal, that they want you to deal with reporting things or something. Pardon me. And then do enough for your managers. So your managers, your senior managers might have a specific depth or understanding that they want to have. Maybe there's meetings, maybe there's a cross-departmental compliance team or something. And then actually protect your company. So that's the thing at the end, is as you've done all these things, consider the next steps along the way. Now, when you see some gaps later, you might actually go back and redefine what compliance looks like for you. Real briefly, just remember that food fraud compliance are a lot more than just GFSI. So you've got GFSI 2018. The requirements there are vulnerability assessment, prevention strategy. But now, just because you've got those documents, the key is us figuring out how much more you need and what it looks like. There's going to be more thorough in year two, year three, year four. And just as a reminder, no documents equals audit nonconformance. And that's a key. You have to have that. And no certification means no sales, essentially. Maybe not right away, but eventually you'll have a lot of explaining to do why you didn't pass it. FSMA officially has, since 2016, required this, just saying you have to have a hazard analysis and must be written regardless of its outcome. So bottom line is, you do the vulnerability assessment, you technically have done this hazard analysis. And then that does include, and they clarify it for actions for economic gain. USDA has some other requirements back to 1906, country of origin labeling, things like that. There's the Organic Foods Production Act, National Organic Program. We'll add in there 1990, 2000, and then now 2022. I think it officially was 2022 last year. So that's more and more important as we're all moving towards a lot more organics across the industry. Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act, adulterated foods and misbranded foods. FDA doesn't go looking for a lot of these food fraud compliance issues because they've got a priority, a hierarchy of needs, which is much higher, you know, deaths and illnesses from faulty food safety. But if you do have a problem, this could be clearly defined as one of those problems that ends up being a compliant nonconformity. And then Sarbanes-Oxley, financial laws, international standards. We don't see too many people get compliant towards those, but they're out there. Codex Alimentarius is still in the draft phases. You can see our blog post for any reviews there. Basically, Codex is aligned and following this direction. World Trade Organization is as well. So we're all moving in the same direction. Bottom line is, it's more than GFSI, but if you follow GFSI, then you're going to be in good shape, aligned with really everything else that's going on, you know, really around the world. So what are the requirements? Real simple. So GFSI is about 13 sections. Basically, it's the same in there. Conduct a food fraud vulnerability assessment. Document the food fraud plan. That's the prevention strategy. And then supported by the food safety management system, meaning that you do this food fraud vulnerability assessment and it connects upwards into your food safety plan, because food fraud is a potential root cause of a food safety incident. So this is just another type of food safety incident, but you got the food safety HACCP above, and then you've got the plan, and you've got food fraud below it. Just clarifying what that is. Now remember, food defense is separate. Absolutely, positively must be separate. So you knew that. That's old hat. So far you said, okay, this has been really interesting, but I'm not learning anything new. This may be the part where it gets to be real. So then this was, again, it was a couple years ago. It was after issue 7 came out. 2014, that we started to look at this more closely, and all of a sudden saw this. We had always been, you know, looking in the food fraud sections, but all of a sudden there's other sections here, and these are requirements for you. So internal audit. The standard shall require that an organization has an internal audit system in place to cover the scope of food safety systems, including the HACCP plan and the food defense and food fraud mitigation plans. So right there, the question I have for you is, does your internal audit team confirm that there's a food safety management system plan in place and a food defense plan and a food fraud plan? And if internal audit is not at least asking those three yes or no questions, maybe follow up is, are you compliant? Maybe there's additional things you ask later. But if they're not asking those three questions, then you're not technically meeting the GFSI requirements. And it's confirmed by GFSI, FSSC, and others. Two separate plans are required, one for food defense and one for food fraud. If you have a single plan for that, or just say in the food safety plan is covered, then you are not compliant. And next is purchasing. So now that I taught introduction to purchasing to the aspiring world leaders in that area, I took a closer look at this, and we do cover it in class. But the standard shall require the organization controls purchasing processes. What's a purchasing process? That's finding suppliers, monitoring suppliers, tracking suppliers, and monitoring product. To ensure that all externally sourced materials and services which have an effect on food safety, basically anything, if you sell to a food company, you're considered to be in the food industry, conform to food safety management, including food fraud mitigation plan requirements. Right there, That's what it's saying right in there. So now you can't have plausible deniability you didn't know it applied to food fraud. So that's asking suppliers if they have a food fraud mitigation plan. Now you could ask, just like you ask internally for the auditors, you could ask in purchasing, in a supplier audit, in supplier onboarding process, you could ask, do you have a food safety management system that conforms to GFSI requirements? Yes or no. Confirming that it includes food defense, confirming that it includes food fraud. Now, if you just ask those questions, you're compliant, and that leads a supplier to have to give a positive statement that yes, they do meet that. So just asking three yes or no questions is a really, really competent, thorough starting point, but you need to ask those questions. So food fraud has grown up. It was born, it was grown up, and now it graduated from college. Time to get to work. So it's interesting to think of this with this analogy. Someone had mentioned that as a thought of, you know, it was born, so they said it's going to college. So it's no longer just in the learning phase. It's now out there, got to get to action. I really like to think of that idea that, again, it's time to get into action. It's get those management systems in place. It's ongoing. It's not learning anything more. It's, well, of course, we'll learn some over time, but pretty much the overall systems are in place. So let's go back and look at those gap analysis questions. Now, this is a great way. This is something we published a long time ago. It's in the USDA training as well as the base 10 survey questions. But this is great as a review, and this is a gap analysis. So, like, for you to do this for yourself, and then share it with your manager of your internal self-assessment. There's a lot of resources online for this. I think also this is a really competent, thorough way for an auditor to start asking questions for to a customer. Now, after that, you'd be auditing not against GFSI but against one of the standards, like BRC, FSSC, IFS, SQF, or others. And so then they would have specific additional question requirements, but this is a good basic overall starting point. So you could answer these just yes or no, or like on a maturity level, like how confident on a scale of 0 is no, and then 1 to 5 on your competence. So one second here. So what are those questions? So Take a moment here, and this is all I have after this is a call to action, and we can start to talk. But list out, number one, have you conducted at least one food fraud vulnerability assessment, yes or no? Just have you conducted one? Now, let's say on a scale of 1 to 5, how do you feel about it? If all of a sudden you were on a live call like this and with your customer and they ask you to put it up on the screen, how confident are you in that? Do you love it and would be so proud that it's a 5, or need to do a lot of work? Is it written? Well, right there, if you have it and you can show it, it's written. Now, early on, people kind of didn't really document some of these things. But then you'd also ask, how formal is it? Have you been authorized to release it publicly or in a statement or to your customers? Number three, create a food fraud prevention strategy. Have you created a food fraud prevention strategy? Yes or no? Do you have a strategy? Then the second is it written? And a big key there is, if it's not written, it's really not a strategy. It's more like an aspiration or a dream or a goal or something like that. And that was early on. People said, yeah, we have a strategy. And I said, can I read it? And they said, no, it's not written. So got to be written, especially as an auditor coming in. You need to see something so that you can confirm confirmation. So that's a little backwards way to look at it. Next one, number five, demonstrate implementation. Hey, all I'm asking is, can you demonstrate implementation? I'm not asking you for documentation, for minutes, no. I'm just saying, can you demonstrate to me that you've implemented it? It's one thing to have it and to start the process, to have those first two documents, but what's implementation? Implementation really is that you show that you have a plan that's monitoring it. It might be once a year we sit down and look at it. That would demonstrate implementation. Now, though, if you told me, if I am your customer, food company, food manufacturer, and you're a supplier, and you tell me that you review your food fraud prevention strategy once a year, I'm going to have a problem with that. Well, unless you explain to me why that's competent and thorough. I would say also, as your chief risk officer, risk manager, risk board, the board risk level risk reviewer for your company, I'm also going to have a problem with that unless you explain clearly why once a year is okay. So how do you demonstrate implementation? And so partially, if you or your supplier tells you how they demonstrate implementation and why they think it's competent, then they're also laying out what the process is, and then you can review it. Number six, executive level sign off. So as an executive, I'd say an officer of your company. Now, if someone's truly an officer of the company knows that they are, if they sign something or approve something, they're approving it on behalf of the corporation as a legal entity. This is not just the manager saying, yeah, it looks good to me. You're fine. You can go home early. This is a formal acknowledgement. And so if you've got an executive level sign off, that's an officer of their company saying, I have reviewed this document and I attest that it's true and competent and thorough. Like they only meet once a year for the demonstrate implementation. I agree that that is competent. And so right there, they realize that they are making a legal statement for their company and for themselves. So just that, I think the most important thing here after having that prevention strategy is the executive level sign off, because right there is that statement. So do you have it? That's a good question. So seven, minimally conduct an annual food fraud incident review. So I would just say, have you conducted at least annually food fraud incident review? And people would say, well, what does that mean? Well, that's a good question. But does that mean you reviewed all your products? Did you get on the internet? Do you just look in the newspaper? How do you do it? But just saying, all I'm asking is, do you conduct an annual review? Now that's required by the GFSI requirements. And then once you say yes, then you a lot of times will need to explain what it is and how you do it. Now, if it's you getting on the internet for 20 minutes, typing in your company name and product, that is a annual review. Now, later we'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel about that? Or me, again, as your customer. Number eight, method to review your incidents and general market incidents. That goes with the combination. At number seven is, do you take the time to review your food fraud incidents in general, overall, in the plan? Then eight is, do you have a method to review it, both your own incidents and general market incidents? And when you say yes, again, someone could say, well, what is your method? And the method to review incidents might be that you do get on the internet and search, and you look at FDA.gov, or you have a food fraud incident database subscription, something like that. That's fine. It's just saying, do you have a method and can you show it to me? Every time you write down a method, it gets better. Every time I load a class every semester, I have my process. It refines every semester to be more smooth. Then the last two are more like administrative confirmations. Does it address all types of food fraud? Yes or no. That's including stolen goods, everything. Go back and look at GFSI requirements. And then number 10, address all products from incoming goods through outgoing goods to the marketplace. Now, a key is that this is not in place to make your life more difficult. This might make it more difficult because some of those things are not in supplier quality assurance or purchasing. They're around a company, but your company needs to protect itself and your customers need you to protect your entire company. So call to action, what to do. So you will be held accountable, and that's inspections, customer questions, or others. So my recommendation, 2023, start out, number one, review your food fraud vulnerability assessment. Make sure it's updated. Review your risk ranks versus what you perceive as at the enterprise level. So when we do likelihood consequence, that shifts over time. You know, all of a sudden with more inflation, less inflation, and maybe you're in new products or not, just to confirm those risk ranks. I made errors early in my career that I thought that my boss and the enterprise risks was static, and I kept moving on that and things changed, and I had a rude awakening sometimes. Gap analysis. So do that gap analysis. We just did that. We walked you through it above. So if you get to this point, you can rewind the video and go through that again. And the key is identifying your compliance requirements. You know, maybe you have something more than GFSI. Maybe you have a customer that has additional requirements. Review your current state and then seek training to support your task. So before you start to act, go out and look to see what's out there. Like organics is to see then this training from USDA. Why would you be anybody in their right mind would do try to meet organic USDA organic training without looking at the organic training provided by USDA? That would be so inefficient. And then expand to a real management system. That's what we're seeing now, is that it's truly in a policy. These procedures are being published, written, reviewed, approved. That's what a real management system is. And you do that by conducting a gap analysis, update your vulnerability assessment, and then define exactly what you still need to do. Follow the process and repeat. That's our recommendation for 2023 and getting started and continuing to evolve your system to be competent. So with that, sorry, I yelled. We'll have some time for a discussion on there.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Spink. As always, a great webinar, very thorough. This is the time, if you have not sent in your questions for Dr. Spink or for Chris Reno, we have here from PGRFSI, you know, if you have more general certification type questions, he's happy to answer those for you. Get those questions in now. As I said before, you'll just open the questions tab on the control panel and you can type them right in there. And we'll go from there. So let me pull up our little Q&A slide here. Dr. Spink, I did want to ask you myself, I loved the timeline you had of, you know, the birth of food fraud as a concept. And I do remember we had you on in 2018. I hosted your first webinar with PGRFSI. It was kind of this new concept. And, you know, I'd been with PGRFSI for 2 years prior. I had never heard of food fraud before. So having seen it kind of evolve through our webinars with you has been really interesting. So obviously we have now these 10 years of history. But where do you see it going in the next 10 years? Like, what kind of developments do you see in the food fraud sphere?
Yeah, I see it as becoming standard operating procedures and boring. B-O-R-I-N-G. It's like I just did a blog post about fire inspectors. We're just going to be fire inspectors, making sure that the emergency doors work, the sprinkler system works, the alarm works. And it's prevention, prevention, prevention. So the thing is that I think it will be just inherently a part of a food safety management system. So every, you know, well, like now even we're teaching, you know, so at MSU, we're teaching supply chain students about food safety and prevention systems, HACCP, but now they're just going to know that product fraud is something you just need to do. It's just going to be kind of old hat. Now you have to go through a lot of this hype cycle where, I mean, think about that. If you, anybody that's been around, you think about like that 2018, 2015, there were more food fraud conferences. Everybody was an expert talking about it. There was so much going on. The hype cycle was just crazy because it was new. And then it got to be so routine that hype was off. And then it just got down. It's really pretty simple. And that's, what I think, what we're going to see. It's going to be just, like quality management. Quality management is about persistence. About sticking to it. It's not necessarily that exciting. So I think that's what we're going to see, because again, the target hardening, that's even something for, you know, crime prevention. Target hardening is really routine, where you're constantly just looking at where there's a vulnerability. You're not a fire engine chasing fires, you know, around where it's all exciting and alarm bells are going off. You're doing all those little things. So that's what I really see, this shift. And I think that's an important emphasis for all of us, is to get to that routine and get it to be more thorough. And I think that's where we're going to see it.
Absolutely. And I can only imagine in the next 10 years, knowing how far technology in general regarding food safety and food production, how far it's come so in the past 10 years, where it'll go in 10 years to help prevent food fraud just inherently as a part of the production process.
I think, well, technology, the role of technology is important in everything. And supply chain management is going through a renaissance as well. You know, we've got COVID, we have all these disruptions. Remember the Suez Canal when that blocked? You've got no inflation, you've got and so we've got information overload and we've got technology overload. So the question really isn't what new technology do we need? It's what's the most efficient application of what we have. And sometimes you take three simple systems and that can lead to incredible levels of target hardening, but you need to combine them in the right way. So we're stepping, but this is the process part. Well, let's say that you don't feel good today and you go to your doctor, that in the past they couldn't really understand what was going on. And so you've got a headache. Well, now they have a lot. They can look at your blood work. They can look at your heart rate. They can do brain scans even. Maybe they could send you for an MRI at some point. They can know very, very precisely what's going on. And early on, they could say, well, we need to get in there. Blurry vision, you're going to the MRI. Whatever. Maybe you're just dehydrated. And they say, go have two glasses of orange juice and see how you feel. That's going to be the same thing when we're applying technology. We're just going to have a lot better filters. We're going to have better primary care doctors, better primary care food fraud prevention managers that are going to be able to look at the whole system and see where there are those logical gaps. Like, do you need to drink more water? Do you need to get a wrist pad on your mouse so you don't get carpal tunnel? And I think we're going to have just a lot more of that basic intelligence about the systems and then be able to efficiently pick the countermeasures. I think also that's a key for food safety. There's a lot going on about traceability, transparency, this and that. And we as humans want to have more technology. It looks really cool. But sometimes the most basic systems are the ones that are most efficient, or sometimes you can't know. Let's say that you're trying to prevent against a meteor strike. A meteor is different than an asteroid hitting Earth, but to track meteors, you know, that would be really, really complex. And it sounds like at some point there's a point of diminishing return with technology based on the likelihood consequence, but also the cost of the response. So if you're trying to stop a meteor from hitting homes, I mean, I haven't heard of a meteor hitting, and I'm not looking for that, but let's say a meteor hitting and killing someone in a house, you'd have to have like a missile defense system out in space, you know, lasers out there, and that's some James Bond stuff. And so all of a sudden to say that level of risk is not efficient for what we've got going here. So I think we'll have a lot of this massive focus on technology, as we should, but then a rational approach to this, to really understanding the risk and the effectiveness of the tools that are being added.
Right. So the idea of we can, but should we?
That's right. Well, and think about, I think whenever, so if you're thinking about, people are talking about technology in the application, you know, do you want more or less? My headaches. Do we want more or less monitoring of people for brain cancer? Well, of course we do. But all of a sudden then to say, well, you know, would you really catch it? Well, what kind of brain cancer? Well, you know, would you have to be going in to the MRI machine once a week? And how many would you have an MRI machine at home? And all of a sudden, then some things are you could do it, and it would be maybe for the president of the United States, you do it all the time or whoever. But for most, it just doesn't make sense. And that's thinking about meteor strikes. And sometimes there's things are so random that you can't, you know, if something's absolutely 100% random, then to be able to predict that is 100% impossible.
So I've got a question, John, and you know, not to over belabor, you know, the talk of technology, but you know, we all know that that's really, you know, some where the industry is going in a lot of directions, you know, through traceability and blockchain and some of those technologies that are already out there, but as you mentioned, very expensive. And so what's that diminishing rate on return? And, you know, every day it's getting cheaper, of course, right? So do you see in the future where we're going to, you know, use the technology, but in two separate ways, where we've got a blockchain-esque, you know, whatever we're going to call that, but the traceability piece, and then also look at, you know, artificial intelligence type of technology in the manufacturing space itself? Do you see that the technologies are going to have to be blended together, you know, for it to truly have the most efficient impact on our overall goal of you know, food safety and, right, and, you know, food adulteration, things like that?
You're asking the right question. And that's one thing. And so again, now being supply chain management, we're looking at this in the big picture from supply chain. So things about transparency, traceability, monitoring inventory is so critical. And you start at the top to say, we need more of that. Okay, yes. But the thing that's really fascinating to watch is then when it gets to implementation, it's not a top-down piece, because you could say generally, generally we want more. But let's look at the bottom up. Let's look at you have to start with a specific problem, and then to say, number one is it a problem, and does this technology meet this problem? You build up from the bottom to then see what type of traceability system do you need. Example being is actually we have a paper that became an ISO standard, product counterfeiting incident clustering tool. So basically you take all your incidents and you plot them on a table and you try to see where your problems are. So like a luxury chocolate company, that they had hardly any adulterant substances. The product incoming goods had very, very little fraud opportunity and very, very little fraud. So if you ask me, should they apply more traceability on their food supply chain? Well, number one, that's not a problem that needs solving. So if you want to give it to me for free, then, and it doesn't cost us anything, time or money, then yeah, we do it. But that's not a problem they have. They have a problem with stolen goods, because these are chocolate bars that are $10 to $50. And they also, they have a bigger problem with packaging being stolen. So this company has a different set of problems. So for them, traceability of incoming goods is not a problem that needs to be solved. So you could have, you could give a traceability solution for free for incoming goods, and they shouldn't spend a minute on it. They would be better off having a second driver in their truck, having an armed driver in their truck, having a truck that's a vault, like a Brinks truck, to deliver their packaging to suppliers. They would be that would be much more efficient. Now, a company that has food safety incidents, or
I want to interrupt just for clarification. When you said their packaging, now you're essentially saying that counterfeiting, what they're doing is they're just taking the packaging and applying it to a lesser, you know, grade chocolate bar.
That's right. So, in this case,
to make sure,
truckloads of genuine packaging film, the rolls of film, have been stolen. Think about that. Think about how many chocolate bars would be in a roll of film, and they've got genuine packaging. So if you went in the marketplace and looked at that consumer package and tested that, read the codes, looked at the authentication features, that's genuine packaging. And so for them, the 90% of their food fraud prevention should be focused on protecting their packaging, their finished goods packaging. So what I'm saying is that technology, yes, more, better, yes, but the key is you always have to ask that question about a specific problem. And once you have a specific problem, like if I get headaches, do I need more water? Do I need more electrolytes? Now we're getting there. So what do I need? Do I need to get a brain scan once a week? No, I need to have an electrolyte drink once a day. All of a sudden then, see, we have a specific problem, and now we have a specific technology. Again, I don't need to have an injection of insulin or something like that, and it don't need an MRI. All I need is to not just drink water, but water with an electrolyte additive. And that's a real key when we look at this. And I think we'll get to the point where decisions aren't being made, and they'll go back to look at the root cause and upwards. And that's actually what we've got in food fraud. When we're looking at this, that's the food fraud initial screenings, a very initial start where we look at real basic concepts, and it'll apply across all industry. I jumped on you in that a little bit, so sorry.
No, I love it. It's fired up. Really great discussion. Well, you know, I know we're right up against time. Thank you so much again, for your time today. It's such an interesting topic, especially in the midst of everything that you and your colleagues and, you know, students are dealing with there on campus. Obviously, our hearts are with you. Wish you the best. Have a great afternoon, and thanks again.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Please visit our website at pgrfsi.com after the webinar. We should have those slides and the recording up shortly. Thank you again all for attending. Thank you, Dr. Spink, for your presentation, and Chris for your input. We hope everyone has a great weekend. Stay safe and stay healthy out there.